Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, I actually played pretty bad tonight. Wasn't as strong with the ball. You know, I had 6 turnovers. Kind of lazy with the ball at times. My teammates did a great job bailing me out. I mean, I just tried to put the ball on time, on target to get those assists, and they got to make the shots. And that's why, you know, I love my teammates. I pride myself on being a triple threat guy. That's the byproduct of it, being able to get another triple double. As a team, we're locked in. I'm locked in. It starts with me defensively setting the tone, and then everybody else is just in tune with what we want to do.
You know, I understand the sentiment, oh, it's all about winning and you got the win. That's not what it's all about. It's about what you bring to the game, how you play, the effort you bring, the unselfishness you bring. And then the results take care of themselves. I've had games this year where I was proud of our guys in games they lost. Look, we played a very good first half, and we didn't try at all in the second half. I'm not happy with that at all. It doesn't matter. You bring effort, period. All the time. All the time. That's all.
We're here to celebrate the greatest who's ever wore the purple and gold. For 20 years, he thrilled us, he made us scratch our head, and he gave us 5 NBA championships. His will to win was very, very high. We're able to put not just one of his jerseys, but both of his jerseys up high.
You know, if you do the work, you work hard enough, dreams come true. You know that, we all know that. But hopefully what you get from tonight is the understanding that those times when you get up early and you work hard, those times when you stay up late and you work hard, those times when you don't feel like working, you're too tired, you don't want to push yourself, but you do it anyway, that is actually the dream. It's not the destination, it's the journey. Mamba out.
But it was so impressive, the amount of NBA stars that showed up for this game. Not just former teammates of Kobe, but guys like Bill Russell, guys like Allen Iverson. You know, Kevin Durant talked about that after the game. He said he actually almost got choked up by seeing the amount of players that showed up just to honor one player. So, you know, as you were looking around the crowd during the game, and then especially during halftime, you're seeing the amount of NBA stars that showed up just for this night, and that was pretty impressive.
We live in America, right? We don't want any kind of centralized government or centralized office controlling our lives. We like to do things on our own. Autonomy has been the hallmark of what we do. And people just don't like the idea, I think, that somebody is looking into a Microsoft iPad. Back in New York, they are making decisions. It's very George Orwellian.
I would have ruled that a catch, right? I would have ruled that a catch based on the fact that I felt like he makes a football move. I feel like when you change direction in any manner, obviously his feet couldn't be on the ground, but when you catch the ball going to your left and you're able to change direction to move forward on the field, to me that is a football move. The Dez Bryant reach was a football move to me, and so I think if you want to change the catch rule, you also have to change what is a football move, which now goes into guys on bang bang plays, whether it's incomplete or catch and fumble. And so I think all those things will have to go together.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza. Thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having a great afternoon. And my goodness, we've got a lot of ground to cover today on this Tuesday. Despite the fact that we're not coming off of a weekend of games, we of course did have the Monday nighter last night in the NFL. Falcons escaping a missed field goal by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers down there in Tampa. So the NFC's playoff picture remains very, very crowded and that much more difficult for the Lions to get in. You heard yesterday, as a matter of fact, Jeremy Reisman of PrideOfDetroit.com talking about how the Lions fans should be Buccaneers fans now. You need the Bucs to knock off these teams. They're in contention for a playoff spot, a wild card spot with the Lions, and that did not happen last night. So that's about the only thing we're coming off of, but we do have some basketball to talk about on the hardwood side of things. Particularly coming up at 3:35, we're going to talk about all things Cavs. The Cavaliers have won 18 out of 19 now, believe it or not. That is just an unbelievable statistic, but not nearly as unbelievable as this one. the Cavaliers, who have won 18 out of 19, still don't have the best record in the Eastern Conference, because the Boston Celtics continue to play exceptional basketball, even more so than they are. It's simply amazing. Cavs have won 5 in a row and 18 out of 19. We'll talk about that with Rick Noland at 3:35, covers the Cavaliers on their beat. And then the Pistons, you might just call them Team Streak, because they follow up losing streaks with winning streaks with losing streaks, and now a three-game winning streak. Team Streak rolls on, and David Fernandez will be joining us coming up at about 4:35, it looks like, from DetroitBadBoys.com to talk about the NBA. So since we're going to start, or excuse me, since we're going to cover so much of the NBA on the program today, I figured it might be a good place to start with the opening monologue. And, of course, I'm talking about the larger NBA, bigger picture here, and that is, of course, the honor, the ceremony honoring former Lakers star Kobe Bean Bryant last night, as they retired not just one but two different jerseys of Kobe Bryant's yesterday. Of course, he infamously changed his number to from number 8 to number 24. He won three titles with number 8. He won two titles with number 24. And so Magic Johnson and the Lakers decided, what the hell, let's just raid them both. Let's retire them both and give him two spots in the rafters at Staples Center. And that's exactly what they did. And now, of course, the question is, for the four-time NBA All-Star Game MVP, Kobe Bryant, the question is what is Kobe's place in the pantheon of greatness in the National Basketball Association? Where do you put him? He's one of the most overlooked guys in NBA history when you think about the all-time greatest players. You know, for the better part of the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, most people who talk about GOAT status, they talk about whether or not LeBron James can catch and or pass Michael Jordan, who still retains in most people's, you know, most circles of the NBA, he still retains GOAT status, greatest of all time. And the question is can LeBron James do enough to catch him in his time that he has left, in the NBA? Michael Jordan, of course, with 6 titles and 6 opportunities with 6 MVPs. LeBron James, as we know, has won 3 and lost 5 NBA finals. Can he overcome that with individual greatness and statistical, statistical milestones? We'll call them milestones in the regular season. Can he overcome the lack of titles? And we all talk about that. And then people say, well, if it's titles we're talking about, then how come nobody talks about Bill Russell, who won 11, and yada, yada, yada. And then, of course, there was the popular, what about Mount Rushmore? Who goes on the NBA Mount Rushmore? That happened a couple of years ago. That was kind of brought up by LeBron James when he was asked about it, and he named his Mount Rushmore, and that got everybody doing the same thing. And the one name, when you think about all of the all-time greats, particularly the greats in recent memory in the last couple of decades, you know, the names of LeBron and Magic and Michael and Bird have been joined by yesteryear's stars like Kareem, Wilt, some say Russell, some have said Shaq. And one of the names that has never been mentioned in those conversations is Kobe Bean Bryant. Kobe, one of the game's all-time great scorers. Kobe, one of the game's all-time great offensive weapons. Kobe, one of the game's all-time greatest competitors, with a drive that was simply Jordan-esque. And I mean that literally, and I mean that figuratively. He had a drive, meaning the way he was able to attack and finish at the rim with power with either hand, with a dazzling array of moves that wonder how the hell he got that ball up and on the backboard with that spin to put that in, with a deadly fadeaway jumper that he relied on in his youth and in his older age, with a personality that never let you get inside of his head, that he was always composed. And in fact, I think some people agreed that earlier in his career, Kobe Bean Bryant literally tried to train his voice to sound like that of Michael Jordan. And he damn near pulled it off. He damn near had the career Jordan did. Finished just one ring shy. Had 5. Probably could have had a 6th had he stayed with Shaquille O'Neal and not The two of them not decided to put their own personal pettiness over what could have been another three-peat and maybe more. Could very well have won six, maybe even outdone Jordan and had seven if he and Shaq had stayed together. Nobody would have held that against Bryant any more than they held Michael Jordan's championships against him because he had Scottie Pippen, another all-time 50 greatest player performer. But nobody talks about Kobe in those terms. Nobody says, okay, here's my Mount Rushmore. It's LeBron James and Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and Kobe Bryant. Nobody says it's, you know, LeBron James, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Kobe Bryant. I mean, almost everybody says LeBron James and Magic Johnson. Oh, I didn't even say Michael Jordan. Excuse me. Almost everybody says those three. There you go. Jordan, LeBron, and Magic. It only leaves the one spot. Some say Kareem. Some say Russell. Some say Bird. Nobody says Kobe. Why does nobody say Kobe? Kobe Bryant, in his five NBA championships as they celebrated his career last night in Los Angeles, won two finals MVPs. He put on a show that honestly the league did not think they would ever see again. After Michael Jordan, and of course he crossed over Michael Jordan, certainly crossed over with him some. But after Jordan left, Kobe Bryant kept doing the things Jordan did in ways that nobody ever thought we would be able to see. And Kobe Bryant, by the numbers, honestly, is really one of the greatest players in the history of the sport. When you look at all-time averages, when you look at, obviously, his win totals, when you look at his percentages, when you look at his ability to impact games, particularly late. You know what Kobe was? Kobe was an assassin. Kobe was a dagger. Kobe was the guy that late in the game, you wanted to have that rock because you know damn well Kobe was going to take it and he was going to stick it. The kind of thing that LeBron James, quite frankly, has never been. The guy that you wanted with the ball in his hands at the last minute. Because LeBron James, far too many times in his 15-year glorious career that is still ongoing and getting better, shockingly, he's better this year than he was last year, 32 going on 33 at the end of the month. LeBron has never been that guy until maybe this year. This year he is stepping up his game in the fourth quarter, meaning late in the game. He's always had good fourth quarter numbers, but not the guy that you want to have the ball in his hands when you're down one or two and less than 6 seconds to go and you need somebody to take that shot. Kobe, you always wanted to take that shot in the same way that you always wanted Michael to take that shot. So 18-time NBA All-Star Kobe Bryant has two different numbers, retired yesterday by the LA Lakers. Mamba out indeed, and it was really just one of the great celebrations of one of the great careers that, quite frankly, at the time he was being, you know, his brilliant self, perhaps a lot of people didn't appreciate. A lot of times they didn't appreciate it because he was trying to be Michael and there would only be one Michael. He tried to sound like Michael, had the same style as Michael, same game as Michael, same flair as Michael, same everything as Michael, same competitive drive as Michael. But when you're trying to be Michael and Michael is the greatest, you're always going to come up just a hair short. And because of that, maybe not, was not always as respected as he should have been. And now in retirement, usually that's when people kind of, you know, the respect for their work goes up, and I feel like he is still a little bit even more underrated now that he is in retirement. Why? Well, as I said, five titles, scoring championships, all-star appearances, all-star game MVPs, finals MVPs, everything that makes up Kobe Bryant's career still doesn't have him in most people's Mount Rushmore. Still isn't one of the guys that people say is he the greatest player of all time. And it's just unfortunate for him. He played the same position as and tried to model the game and did an amazing job of carbon copying or cloning the game of Michael Jordan. But that was the career of Kobe Bryant. Kush, what is going to be your enduring memory of number 8 or number 24? And do you like the idea, by the way? I was, you know, I'm going to ask this of callers, too, at 866-240-1065. Do you like the idea of retiring two different jersey numbers? There's a part of me that finds that cheesy and annoying. A little bit different than, for example, Julius Erving, my greatest all-time player. So, excuse me, my favorite all-time player. So, might just be a little bit of bias here. but he was number 32 for the New York Nets before he came to Philadelphia. And the New York Nets of the ABA, that number 32 has been retired, and I believe by the NBA as well as his number 6 with the Philadelphia 76ers. But that's different than, hey, I played for the Lakers my whole career, and I'm just going to change my number. 8 to 24, and now you got two different jersey numbers hanging up there. It might be a petty little thing, but I'm wondering if that rubs anybody the wrong way, if it makes it look like he is different or more special than number 32 that is hanging in those rafters, Magic, the number 33 that is hanging in those rafters, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and any of the all-time greats, Jerry West and on down the line, that whose jersey numbers were retired by the Lakers. Kush, what will be your memory, and why do you think he's not on that Mount Rushmore shortlist that so many people have offered in the last couple of years?
First, let me answer the jersey thing real quick. I don't really have a problem with it because of the fact his career is almost split down the middle in terms of which number he wore. He really did essentially have two numbers through the course
but
of his career.
I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, I still kind of feel, I don't know. There's a part of it, as I sit here and praise Kobe Bryant for the last 12 minutes, as I did in this monologue, there's a part of it that just looks selfish. It looks like I need more attention than I'm getting. I'm going to change my number. We're going to have to resell new jerseys to everybody who's got Kobe's, jersey that they wear to games. And it just almost looks a little selfish. What was the reason for that?
Yeah.
If I may, before you go on there, Jim, LeBron James did this when he went from 23 as a Cav, but he changed teams when he went to the Heat. And it was at about that time he declared that in homage and in honor and in respect of Michael Jordan, he said nobody should ever wear 23 again. So he switched his jersey number from 23, which he had as a Cavalier, to 6 when he played with the Miami Heat, which was a tribute to, again, my favorite player of all time,
Dr. J.
And then when he came back to Cleveland, it was like, all right, what are you going to do? Are you going to wear the 6 you had in Miami, or are you going to take your 23 back, even though you said nobody should wear 23 anymore? Because of Michael Jordan. He said, well, I'm going to go back to my 23. It's my Cavs number. I'll give LeBron a break, strange as it might sound, because he at least changed teams and there was a reason.
Yeah.
But Kobe didn't change teams. So I feel like this one is more, I don't know, egotistical, selfish. I need more attention. Please, everybody, look at me. I'm not number 8, I'm number 24 now. I just don't quite
get it. And that's part of where, it is. It's a very rare thing for a player of this caliber to have two different numbers for the same team. It's, as you pointed out, by comparing it to LeBron, for example, it's one thing if you change teams. It's not like Miami would ever retire the 23 or Cleveland would ever retire the 6, in the future regarding him. And as to what the exact reason I honest to goodness cannot remember, except to say that about the time period, 05, 06 type of ballpark when he did change the number, that was in that middle part of his career where Shaq had already left, but Pau Gasol and the others to make their next 3 straight finals with 2 titles near the latter part of his career. That was the block of time about 06 when he changed from 8 to 24, mm-hmm. where it was just him and they were either not making the playoffs or barely making it. And then he got, more help and they became a stud team for at least a 3-year window again. So I don't really have as much of a problem with it. I mean,
you have a problem with the two jerseys hanging up, though?
Honestly,
does it take a little away from the other guys whose numbers are up there?
Honestly, if I'm remembering what I saw and heard about this last night, the only problem I could see myself having is that it was two different spots. If anything, it should have been one big jersey with both numbers on it.
Yeah, with an 8/24 or something.
Yes,
yeah, maybe.
Yeah, something like
maybe.
That. Not two separate that ones. That's your egotistical thing coming in there. That should have just been one.
Yeah, that's kind of, I guess that's kind of where I'm coming from on this. It's just, in the pantheon of Lakers greatness, up there, he's got two spots on those
actors
as opposed to one for all the other all-stars.
Bingo, he should have one spot with both numbers acknowledged. As for the other couple of questions you were posing, why does he get left off of, first of all, my enduring image of him is that dagger kind of guy at the end of a game. The kind of trait that as a Cavs fan, you wish LeBron had more often, and I think it's late enough in his career for us to say that's not and never will be part of his game. So I've always admired that about Kobe, that assassin's mentality, at the end of the game.
Yeah,
few
absolutely.
Guys have that Well, actually, I take it back. A lot of guys have that. Not many can actually pull it off. Jordan, Kobe, a handful of others were able to actually pull that off.
Agreed.
And then in terms of why he might be not mentioned as much in, you know, where does he stand on the GOAT rankings? I think a big part of it is he does share the exact same position with Michael Jordan, that two-guard spot. And now that he's been out of the game for a year and a half now, because it was the end of the 2015-16 season when he did hang him up, so it's been a year and a half now since he's been on the basketball court, and we're kind of forgetting that a little bit. But I think it's because he's in the same position as Jordan, and the two-guard, in addition to Jordan and Kobe, there are a lot of other guys that had outstanding careers, and I think to a small degree, more time that's going by, he's going to get lost in that shuffle, unfortunately.
From whom? Who is going to be shuffling past him?
Well, it's hard to imagine in terms of a two-guard, anybody guards coming up, but the biggest thing is he's behind Jordan just in terms of his own position. You still, even if you wanted to put Kobe at number two, and I think some do, it would still have to go Jordan, Kobe.
Well,
for
I don't
that
think,
position.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt he's number two, right? There's never been a two guard better than Kobe Bryant other than Michael Jordan, right?
I agree with that.
I don't think he's going to get lost in the shuffle in that regard, because I can't think of anybody better. There have been some great two guards, some great shooters, great scorers, but not like him. Not like Mike. I mean, Larry was a three, a small forward. LeBron is a three, a small forward. Magic was a one. The great players of all time that you think about. Charles Barkley was a power forward. Karl Malone was a power forward. Tim Duncan was a power forward / center. And of course you get into all the actual centers like Shaq and Hakeem and Ewing and mm-hmm. Wilt and Kareem and all that. So, I don't think there's any doubt that he's the second best two guard ever. And I guess what your point might be then is since Michael Jordan is the greatest player ever, Kobe can never be considered as the greatest player ever because he's not even the best player at his own position.
I guess that, to sum it up real quick, I guess that is kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but that's kind of how
it's real. I mean, you know what? Just to throw it out there, Joe Montana might be the greatest or the second greatest player in history, but by the time Brady's done, he won't even be considered the best quarterback in history because Brady will have
interesting comparison to that. Sure,
his fifth one. You know what I mean? Somebody like, oh boy, I'm trying to think of an all-time great. Just because he's having a Hall of Fame career right now, Antonio Brown is putting up numbers that are just astounding. The young, relatively young, I think sixth season from Central Michigan guy, first player in history, Jim, to have five straight seasons or five seasons period with 100 or more catches.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's going to miss the final two regular season games,
yep.
The numbers are astounding. He'll never be considered the greatest football player ever because he'll never be considered even the greatest wide receiver because nobody's taken that title from the GOAT, Jerry Rice. So it's just like that with Kobe. He'll never get maybe, kudos as the greatest individual player because he can't be the greatest individual two guard because Mike is there. And if you think about that proverbial Mount Rushmore that we talk about, there's one point guard on it, Magic. There's one three on it, whether for you, if it's Bird or it's LeBron, it's only one.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have both of them there.
Sure.
And then there's one center on it. For most people, it's Kareem. And then there's one, forward on it or a power forward on it or whatever. And, that might be Tim Duncan on a lot of people's Mount Rushmore. And I know I'm sure I'm probably missing somebody somewhere, but you notice how there's not two point guards.
Mm-hmm. If
there's not two threes, there's not two centers.
Yeah.
It's just one or the other. You can't be the all-time greatest at the game if you're not the greatest all-time at your own position. So that's something to kick around. I'm going to ask Rick Nolan and David Fernandez about that later because we're talking to two beat writers today. Cavaliers beat writer Rick Nolan coming up here in a few minutes, and David Fernandez, Pistons beat writer, coming up at about 4:35. Right now, let's go wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day, bowl season in college football is just getting underway, and this year there are 76 teams playing in 39 bowl games. 40 to count the national championship game. With six wins being the threshold of bowl eligibility, there were 82 bowl-eligible teams. So even with the overabundance of games, there were still not enough bowl games for all eligible teams. Sometimes in the past few years, there have actually been more games than eligible teams to fill them, which got us to thinking, what would happen if bowl eligibility was increased from 6 to 8 wins? The result for this year, 2017, would be cutting the number of eligible teams nearly in half to 43 that would be bowl eligible at 8 wins. This would then allow the number of bowl games to be cut nearly in half from 40 to 22, which would make winning or making it to a bowl something to say was an accomplishment. Because right now, 6 wins, that means going 6-6 gets you in. It does not even mean you had a great season. So I love the idea. Put it up to 8 and cut the number of bowls down. It'll never happen because it's about dollars, not wins, not points. It's about dollars. But there's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Talking NBA basketball with Rick Nolan coming up next after the Bottom of the Hour Sports Center right here on the Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, I actually played pretty bad tonight. Wasn't as strong with the ball. You know, I had 6 turnovers, kind of lazy with the ball at times. My teammates did a great job bailing me out. And I just tried to put the ball on time, on target to get those assists, and they got to make the shots. And that's why, you know, I love my teammates. I pride myself on being a triple threat guy. That's the byproduct of it, being able to get another triple double. As a team, we're locked in. I'm locked in. It starts with me defensively setting the tone, and then everybody else is just in tune with what we want to do.
Yeah, LeBron James is averaging a triple-double in his last, 13 games, I think?
I know he's had like 3 or 4 in a row or something.
I think 4 in a row and 13, averaging the triple-double in 13. I think he has 6 on the season, averaging a triple-double over the last 13, having arguably his best season, just 2 weeks shy of age 33, and he says his teammates are bailing him out. That's a little humility from LeBron James can go a long way. Yeah, an absolutely amazing run. Joining us now to talk NBA basketball, particularly from a Cavaliers perspective, Cavaliers beat writer Rick Nolan, joining us once again right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey, Rick, how are you?
Doing well. Catching my annual Christmas cold, but I'll survive.
Well, if it's an annual thing, you got to do it, right? I mean, Rick, it is kind of cute to hear LeBron say that. He didn't play very well last night in getting, 20 and 12 and 15, I want to say, something like that. And yet another triple-double, and he's on this incredible run. They are on this incredible run. He said he didn't play very well last night. How do you attribute, to what do you attribute this? I mean, is it as simple as conditioning and working hard, or is there something freaky, extraterrestrial almost, about LeBron James to be as physically freakish at 32, and again, 2 weeks shy of 33, as he was at 18. You can't play 15 years in this league, adding on top of 15 regular seasons all of the playoffs that have resulted in finals, 8 finals, so I don't even know how many countless numbers of minutes, games, and total seasons that adds up to, and still be this spry and this athletic, after 15 years of that, unless I think you're either a test tube creation and he's on steroids or he's just a physically gifted, freaky guy.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget all the Team USA and Olympic appearances
that have been involved in there as well.
And he is playing better than I have ever seen him play, Bob. And he's doing it in an intelligent way. His mid-range and three-point game are better than they've ever been. The assist numbers, have just been phenomenal. And he's got, I think, 5 straight of at least 10, and I think that ties for the longest stretch of his career.
That's correct.
A little bit surprised by that. But, he's had 50 games of 15 and 17 and I think 13 in that stretch. I know that he's had a 15 and a 17. Part of that, the one game he scored or assisted on 22 straight points to close it, and he had 17 assists, and 9 of them came on 3-pointers. So, he's involved in 43 points there, plus he scored 25. But when you have assists on 9 3-pointers, I think you also have to give some credit to the guys you're playing with, because.
Exactly.
It doesn't usually take a great pass to get an assist on a 3-pointer, although LeBron is better than anyone I've seen at driving and making wraparound passes with his right or left hand from the baseline to the corner or even to the wing. But when you're getting that many assists, your teammates are doing, they're holding up their end of the bargain as well. And I don't mean to take anything away from what LeBron is doing.
Because no, he's but having you're right, I'm glad to hear you say that. There are assists and there are assists. For example, all of the...
I think they know that, you know, if you look way down the road to Golden State, you know, potentially in the finals even, maybe even if it's Houston, he's a versatile defender that I think they believe they're going to need some help from him when you get to that stage of the season. So they may have to bite the bullet and force feed him minutes, you know, at this point in the season just to make sure he's ready later.
Rick Noland joining us, Cavaliers beat writer. Last thing before you go, outside of the Cavs, Kobe, of course, had numbers 8 and 24 retired last night in an amazing ceremony for the Mamba in Los Angeles. Where is he all time? When we hear people, and LeBron started this conversation, I think, about 2 years ago, somebody asked him about his Mount Rushmore, what four heads are on it, and he named his four.
Yeah.
He didn't include himself, but he said he will nudge somebody off of that by the time he's done, he believes. And the names that are most frequently mentioned when we talk about a Mount Rushmore are Magic and LeBron and Michael and Bird and Kareem. Some will say Bill Russell. Some will say Tim Duncan. Nobody ever says Kobe Bryant. And his five NBA championships and his 18 All-Star appearances, his four All-Star Game MVPs, and on down the line we go. He's had one of the greatest careers ever and was as close to being Michael as you could be Michael without somebody stealing some DNA at birth and making another one. And yet he's never, ever kind of counted in that realm. Where do you see him all time?
Interesting you bring that up because I actually did, it might have been 2 years ago that I wrote a column on what I thought were the five best players of all time. And it's an apples and oranges thing. It's a water cooler, bar stool, whatever you want to call it type of argument.
Because, it's a sports talk argument. That's why we're doing it.
Exactly. Right. Different eras, different styles. But I think at the time, I think I'm almost positive that I had Kobe number five. I think I went Michael, LeBron, Wilt, and then I can't remember whether my fourth. I can't remember whether my fourth was either Jabbar, or Oscar Robertson.
Part of your top five. I apologize because we're talking Kobe. You just struck me.
Yeah,
Magic is not a part of your top five.
Well, see, then you run into Magic and Bird. Neither one of them would have been in there, and neither would Russell. You know, so it all depends what you're weighing and who you like and your preferences. But, you know, you can go, I think, 10 to 12 deep and interchange them pretty much depending on what you're valuing. What is it, championships? Is it athletic ability? Is it stats? But I had Kobe 5 then. I think if I had to really sit down and think about it for quite a while and really look up everything, he might end up being 6 or 7 on my list. And that's not anything against him. It's just guys I value a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to detract from what Oscar did because he did it in an era where, you know, a 6'5 point guard was, you know, he was one of the biggest guys on the floor sometimes.
Right. Totally different game.
Right.
Totally different game when Russell played it, too.
And Chamberlain as well. So, you know, I know we're running out of time, but I think it would be a lot easier if we did that, you know, from 1985 on, or 1980 on.
Yeah, I would go 80, to be honest with you.
Because the game hasn't changed that much outside of 3 points.
Because 80 is when Bird and Magic came in, obviously, and that's that's what we kind of consider this new era, if you will, and, you know, when the league kind of changed a bit. So, and by the way, I can solve your dilemma because you had Kobe at 5 and then you said maybe you'd reevaluate it down at 6 or 7. How about Kobe number 8 is 5th and Kobe number 24 is 7th? What do you think?
I love it.
Give him two spots. What the hell? They gave him two spots in the rafters at Staples. Rick Noland, Great stuff, Rick. Keep up the good work, my friend, and thanks for the conversation.
All righty. Anytime. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well. We'll talk to you after the holiday. All right. 3 minutes after four. We're late. We got to get a top of the hour local sports center coming up at you right here on ESPN.
Well, I actually played pretty bad tonight. Wasn't as strong with the ball. You know, I had six turnovers, kind of lazy with the ball at times. My teammates did a great job bailing me out. And I just tried to put the ball on time, on target to get those assists, and they got to make the shots. And that's why, you know, I love my teammates. I pride myself on being a triple threat guy. That's a byproduct of it, being able to get another triple-double. As a team, we're locked in. I'm locked in. It starts with me defensively setting the tone, and then everybody else is just in tune with what we want to do.
You know, I understand the sentiment, oh, it's all about winning and you got the win. That's not what it's all about. It's about what you bring to the game, how you play, the effort you bring, the unselfishness you bring. And then the results take care of themselves. I've had games this year where I was proud of our guys in games they lost. Look, we played a very good first half, and we didn't try at all in the second half. I'm not happy with that at all. It doesn't matter. You bring effort, period. All the time. All the time. That's all.
We're here to celebrate the greatest who's ever wore the purple and gold. For 20 years, he thrilled us, he made us scratch our head, and he gave us 5 NBA championships. His will to win was very, very high. We're able to put not just one of his jerseys, but both of his jerseys up high.
You know, if you do the work, you work hard enough, dreams come true. You know that, we all know that. But hopefully what you get from tonight is the understanding that those times when you get up early and you work hard, those times when you stay up late and you work hard, those times when you don't feel like working, you're too tired, you don't want to push yourself, but you do it anyway, that is actually the dream. It's not the destination, it's the journey. Mamba out.
But it was so impressive the amount of NBA stars that showed up for this game. Not just former teammates of Kobe, but guys like Bill Russell, guys like Allen Iverson. You know, Kevin Durant talked about that after the game. He said he actually almost got choked up by seeing the amount of players that showed up just on one player. So, you know, as you were looking around the crowd during the game and then especially during halftime, you're seeing the amount of NBA stars that showed up just for this night, and that was pretty impressive.
We live in America, right? We don't want any kind of centralized government or centralized office controlling our lives. We like to do things on our own. Autonomy has been the hallmark of what we do. And people just don't like the idea, I think, that somebody is looking into a Microsoft iPad. Back in New York, they are making decisions. It's very George Orwellian.
I would have ruled that a catch, right? I would have ruled that a catch based on the fact that I felt like he makes a football move. I feel like when you change direction in any manner, obviously his feet couldn't be on the ground, but when you catch the ball going to your left and you're able to change direction to move forward on the field, to me, that is a football move. The Dez Bryant reach was a football move to me. And so I think if you want to change the catch rule, you also have to change what is a football move, which now goes into guys on bang bang plays, whether it's incomplete or catch and fumble. And so I think all those things have to go together.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is indeed. Thanks for being with us. 15 minutes after 4 o'clock. I got 45 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you this afternoon. Then Mike Miller's awesome at drive time coming your way at 5 o'clock. Coming up in about 15-20. I'll give it 22 maybe. More minutes. David Fernandez will join us talking Pistons basketball. We just spent a little bit of time talking about the Cavaliers. LeBron James, speaking of greatness like LeBron, talked a little bit about Kobe Bryant as well. And we're going to continue that part of the conversation now. David Fernandez, again, talks Pistons with us at about 435, 440, somewhere in that neighborhood. Pistons are indeed team streak. Are they not, Kush? I mean, I wasn't joking about that. Let me see. 3 wins in a row. Going back, Thunder, Celtics, Suns, then 7 losses in a row, Wizards, Sixers, Spurs, Bucks, Warriors, Celtics, Nuggets, now 3 wins in a row, Hawks, Pacers, and Magic.
And the latest 3-game winning streak that they're on has brought them from down to 8th, because remember they were up at like 2 when the Cavs played them. They went down to 8 because of the losing streak. Now they're back up to 4 all by themselves.
Yeah, craziness. Just team streak, and now they got the Mavericks tomorrow as they look to make it 4 in a row. And it'll be very interesting to see what they're able to put together. So David Fernandez will try to make some sense out of all that for us as we talk a little bit more trying to make some sense, as they say, out of Kobe Bryant last night. Kobe Bryant, of course, had number 8 and number 24 retired last night by the Los Angeles Lakers. We're talking about Lakers, and we're talking about where he is on the pantheon of all-time greats, because and Rick Nolan said, I used to have him at about 5th, and now I have him at about 6th or 7th, if I really break it down. And not that there's any shame of that, by the way. Being called one of the top 10 players of all time would be pretty doggone good career accomplishment. But, Jim, Kobe Bryant wanted more than that. I think it's pretty clear that he always wanted to be. I mean, he took the Nike commercials in the 80s very, very seriously. He said, I want to be like Mike. If I could be like Mike, I want to be like Mike. And he said, I'm going to be like Mike. I'm going to walk like Mike. I'm going to talk like Mike. I'm going to play like Mike. I'm going to mimic his moves. I'm going to shoot his fadeaway. I'm going to do his dunks. I'm Mike. And you know what? Almost to the letter, he looked like him, acted like him, talked like him, and had a body like him, and played like him. I think he's a little bit taller than Mike, wasn't he? But I just feel like he almost was. And because he wanted to be Mike, being top 7 or 8 where Rick Nolan has him is not good enough. It's just not. And I wonder what it takes to make that Mount Rushmore with his 5 titles and his 25 points per game scoring averages, 18 All-Star berths, and all of the different things that identify him. 2-time finals MVP. What does it take for him to be in the conversation? And I'm okay, by the way. Here's the thing, Jim. And callers, if you would like to call at 866-240-1065. Here's the thing. I'm okay with that conversation being had, and at the end of it all, he is outside of it. If he's 6th or 7th or 8th or 9th or whatever it is, I'm okay with that if the conversation is held. But for me, it would appear that he's not even in that conversation. Nobody talks about, do I go Wilt or Kareem on the Mount Rushmore? Do I go Bird or LeBron on Mount Rushmore? Which one of those things do I do? It's never, do I go Kobe or Michael, because it's Michael. Do I go Kobe or one of those other guys? He's just never in the conversation, and I wonder if that's doing a disservice to one of the great careers of NBA history, Jim.
And it could be. And, you know, we partly touched on parts of this in the first hour, that being the same position as Mike, you know, probably isn't helping. Incidentally, for what it's worth, he is listed at 6'6", so that's the same as Jordan, just random FYI there. But what's interesting about it is that because of some of these things, he's not even brought up in the discussion. I mean, it's one thing to say, no, you're not the GOAT necessarily. But it's another thing to kind of get skipped over in the conversation. I mean, I feel like his name, you know, should be brought up in the conversation, even if you don't give him the title, as it were.
Yeah, I guess that's all I'm talking about, is he in the conversation? Should he be in the conversation? And the answer to me is yes. He should be in that conversation. And I feel like at the end of it all, he will be when the careers of guys that are also being considered right now are over. And what I mean by that is LeBron's still playing, so there's still a lot of fluidity to the mount. Is there room on it for both him and Larry Bird, for example? Is there room on it for both him and, Magic Johnson? You know, it's only a 4-person thing, so this is very, very difficult. But it's still very fluid because LeBron isn't done. When history looks back at this in 2030, okay, 13 years from now as an example, when history looks back on it, I don't know, in 2040, and they're looking back at the early part of this century, and they're looking in the 2000s, and they're looking at the career Kobe Bryant had. And they're looking at the career LeBron James had starting in 2003. And they're looking at the career that ended before that time, you know, of Bird and Magic and all those guys. And that's when I think it will truly be able to be, the conversation will be had, where NBA historians appreciate what this guy did by going back and watching tape. See, right now we are spoiled by being in the era of LeBron. We're spoiled by being in the era of guys doing all-time things right now like Steph Curry's been able to do. For example, where and when will the little guy be able to make his claim and his case for a spot up there in that rare air. You know, Isaiah Thomas, the Pistons legend, you know, doesn't crack that, although he's one of my favorite players of all time, I can tell you that. None of the really pure young, or excuse me, smaller point guards have ever done it, but none of them have ever done what Steph Curry does, which is, in addition to handing out 8 or 9 or 10 assists a game, is making shots routinely from 29 feet, is making the three-point shot in the NBA a bigger, and not just him, because Clay and now Durant's over there and everything else, a different kind of weapon than it's ever been before. We're in the middle of that now. Does time need to pass first before the true appreciation for a Kobe can be felt, before really evaluating the place of Steph Curry? You know, if Curry, just to throw him out there, and I'm not a Curry fan, I think you know that, but if Curry goes on to win 2 or 3 or 4 more titles, you know, he's got a pair. If he goes on to win 4, 5, or 6, and he continues to rewrite the NBA's three-point record book, and not just as a Steve Kerr type of shooter where that's all he does is spot up, wait for the great player to dish it to him, and hit threes. I use Steve Kerr as an example. You could use a lot of guys as an example of that, right? But he's also that 8, 9, 10 assist guy, that 22, 23 points per game guy. If you add those things to all-time NBA three-point records to, I don't know, let's say 4 titles, at what point does that guy in NBA history now, in the annals of history looking back, does he say, or does he get to crack that barrier that is held primarily by big, strong, tall front court guys, you know, like Magic, even though he was a point guard, he played like a front court guy. LeBron, Mike, of course, being 6'6", being a small four, or being a two guard, but he could also play small four. At what point do you welcome in somebody like Curry? And how does that eventually affect the status of a guy like Kobe Bryant?
No, that's a good question to put out there, because obviously, you know, there's going to be some time that has to pass a little more, seeing what happens at the ends of careers of guys like LeBron and farther off. A guy like Curry, so that's definitely going to play to it. I got a side note, random question on this whole subject for you. I'd love your thoughts on this. Did you notice one of the things that you heard Magic Johnson say in that montage? The greatest to ever wear the purple and gold, meaning the Lakers. And there have been so many great players through the decades that have come through the Lakers, going all the way back to when they first moved from Minneapolis to L.A., and you had Baylor and Jerry West, the logo, and on down the line. Is Kobe even the best Laker of all time?
No, he's not. I think that's Magic presenting the humility of the moment. This isn't my night, Magic thought to himself. This is Kobe's night. He knows full well, Magic Johnson does, because he's been retired for long enough and he knows how he's regarded, that he is on everybody's Mount Rushmore. Nobody has ever thought of anybody else as being the best point guard in the history of the NBA other than Magic Johnson. Not Jason Kidd, not John Stockton, not Isaiah Thomas, not Allen Iverson, not you know, any of the greats right now, point guards like Russell Westbrook and so on and so forth, which is a different new kind of a breed, by the way, of point guard. He knows how he's viewed, so what's he going to say? You know, the second greatest Laker of all time after me? No. He's going to call him that because it's his night. It's Kobe's night. Is he going to say the second greatest Laker, third greatest Laker of all time after me and Kareem? No. He's going to say a guy that won 5 titles. I won 5 titles, meaning Magic. I have won 5 titles. Kobe has as many as me and scored more points than I did. That's the greatest Laker of all time, because he knows, guess what's going to happen 5 minutes from now on the internet. Debates are going to be held, and people are going to come and say, no way, Magic was better. Magic was better. He ran the show. He was the coach on the floor. He did it all. He set Kareem up. He made James Worthy a Hall of Famer. Magic, magic, magic. He knows full well nobody is going to actually rank Kobe ahead of him, in my mind. And quite frankly, Kareem, with his 6 championships, by the way, matching Mike, you know, and being the NBA's all-time leading scorer, is in some people's mind, you know, we haven't had this discussion very often. And maybe we'll ask David Fernandez about this after the bottom of the hour, Jim, the Pistons beat writer for DetroitBadBoys.com, just to get another perspective on it. But The argument nobody has really given a lot of attention to is Michael Jordan really the GOAT? We've all just kind of accepted that. But when you compare his career accomplishments to those of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you can make a very strong case that Kareem is the greatest basketball player ever to play this sport. Because Kareem did it not only in the earlier era, but continued to do it into the 80s in the Magic and Bird era. He continued to be a dominant force. Now, some might say in large part because of Magic, and that's probably true. It extended Kareem's longevity of dominance a few years longer than perhaps it would have otherwise. But there is a significant argument to be made that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the GOAT. So last night, it wasn't the time, in my opinion, just to answer your question in a very long way, Jim, for Magic Johnson to say anything other than the greatest Laker of all time or the greatest guy ever to wear these colors or whatever, however he phrased it. It wasn't the time to say, is it me or is it Magic or is it Kareem or is it the logo or is it Kobe? This is the night to retire Kobe's numbers, so of course we're going to say it's Kobe. It's just that simple.
No, and you're right, and I agree with that part. Magic was smart enough to say what he did during the ceremony last night. And I guess the long roundabout way of a small argument to this whole conversation that I'm trying to throw out there is that when you're playing for a team like the Lakers or the Celtics, who have, in both of them especially, have so many championships over the course of their franchise's history, so many Hall of Fame and truly great players, that by playing for those types of teams, you can get lost in the shuffle a little bit. Here's what I mean by that. Forevermore, the Cavs' best player ever will have been LeBron, right? They were basically an also-ran franchise before him. And, sorry to again point out, you saw that, all you Cavs fans, you saw in that 4 years he was in Miami, they'll be an also-ran franchise when he leaves. Same thing with the Chicago Bulls. There really is no rich Chicago Bulls history outside of the block of time when Michael Jordan wore 23, and for those couple months, 45, for the Chicago Bulls. And I almost wonder, is something like that, by playing for the Lakers and coming after all the various greats that that franchise has had, relative to, say, a LeBron or a Michael Jordan, who are clearly now and will for a long, 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 long time going into the future, easily that franchise's best player. And I wonder if that plays into it even a tiny little bit.
Probably does. I think it probably does. And you know who's a good person to ask that question of? That would be David Fernandez. And I think we should do that. I think it's a great conversation to continue. In addition to Team Streak, the Pistons, David Fernandez, of course, writes about the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. And he's going to be our next guest after the bottom of the hour local sports center that's coming up. And hey, Kush.
Yes.
On the way into this bottom of the hour local sports center, I have in front of me what looked to be a couple of tickets to a hockey game. And if you like your walleye on ice rather than on the grill or in the frying pan, you can go see them. Walleye and Indy Fuel, 7:15 start on the 27th. That's a week from tomorrow. A week from tomorrow, the 27th, at the Huntington Center. If you want to go see the Toledo Walleye and the Indy Fuel, you got it. Tickets are yours, a pair of them, at 866-240-1065 for caller number 7. Lucky number 7, 866-240-1065. We'll set you up with Walleye. Then we're going to come back and talk Pistons basketball, David Fernandez, and hopefully you as well at 866-240-1065 right here on the ticket. It's 4:37, 23 minutes of outstanding awesome left until drive time comes your way with Mr. Mike Miller. And I want to shift gears. Well, we're staying with the NBA, but just shifting gears from our conversation we had with Rick Noland out of Cleveland talking about the Cavaliers team dominant, 18 out of 19 and 5 in a row against Team Streak. Three wins in a row, followed by 7 losses in a row, followed by 3 wins in a row. They don't like to do that win-loss thing very much in Detroit. Joining us now to talk about it is David Fernandez, who writes about Team Streak for DetroitBadBoys.com. And, David, thanks for joining us once again, my friend. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Just counting down the days of the holidays.
Yes, indeed. 6 to go, if my count is right. 6 to go until Christmas 2017. And for those celebrating Hanukkah that's going on now, happy Hanukkah. But it is indeed a great time of the year. All right, you know, the Pistons are giving gifts, obviously, to their fans right now by snapping a losing streak and following it with a winning streak. This really is a team that can let whatever is happening build upon itself, is it not, considering the number of, you know, the amount of streaks that I guess they've undergone in the past a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, you never like to see that long of a losing streak. It was around 2 weeks where they couldn't get a win. And even in game, they've been going on streaks where they're giving up big leads in the fourth quarter and then kind of going on a little streak to end it and get the win in their last game. So, yeah, you know, they've looked good against some of the you know, lesser teams in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, it's just something that they have to do to be, you know, right where they are. They're at the number four seed in the playoffs right now. To kind of keep that streak going, you know, they really have to just keep on beating up on their easier schedule.
Yeah, Jim Kuchlin pointed out before how they were second in the East the last time they played the Cavaliers. Then the seven-game losing streak knocked them all the way down to eighth. And now their three-game winning streak, they're back up to fourth. So, you know, I mean, talk about just, you know, roller-coastering and up and down they go in the standings. It's not extraordinarily essential right now given the fact that it's still mid-December. But is this what this team is going to be built on? Is this team going to be riding highs for a long period of time and then really, you know, suffering with the lows? Because it just kind of doesn't seem like, you know, it seems like momentum, I guess, for lack of a better word, is really what carries them, whether it be positive momentum or negative momentum, David.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much of you know, how that they are, like, psychologically when they're approaching games. I think a lot has to do with the quality of opponent that they're playing. They played one of the most, while they were on that seven-game losing streak, those first 20-something odd games of the season, they had the second toughest strength of schedule in the NBA at that point. Now it's lightened up a little bit since then because they played the Hawks, Pacers, who are a quality team, and the Magic, who aren't that great. But I think it's more so just a testament to, even in that losing streak, they were losing by 4 points at the Spurs. They were losing by, you know, 5-6 points or something like that with the Warriors at home. They lost by 4 points at the Bucks. You know, they were really in almost all of those games, remaining competitive. And, you know, frankly, just a few shots didn't go their way, but they were in them. So it wasn't like they were getting blown out. It wasn't
Until the Nuggets game. What the hell was that?
that was one of the more concerning games. I think that was the one where up until that point, I wasn't concerned, but then after the Nuggets game, I was like, whoa, you know, and the Nuggets didn't have their two best players in Jokic and Paul Millsap, so I was under the impression that they were going to kind of rout them in that game. They were 6-point favorites in Vegas, and that's, you know, it's kind of high for just a regular season game against a team with the exact record that you have. So I was a little concerned, but they've righted the ship since then, and they've looked impressive during a lot of these stretches during their last three games.
We're talking to David Fernandez, who writes about the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. Team streak has won three in a row now. And it looks like there are periods of time when they look like they want to be a 2017 team, meaning embracing the three-point shot. For example, in this particular game, you know, a franchise record 17. I'm not saying they're going to make or take 17 threes a game all the time, but they show spurts of being that team that isn't going to be trying to be too creative offensively and you know, find ways to work for good shots in the paint and that sort of thing, or up-tempo and running. But they are going to embrace what so many other teams, including the defending champions, have, and that is the outside shot. Are they a team of good enough shooters to do this, again, not to the level of 17, that's a franchise record, but to embrace that as a fundamental core principle of their offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they've already proved that. We're already over a third of the way through the season right now at this point. They were ranking, and this is just by my memory, they were up in the top 10 in three-point shooting percentage so far this season. They have guys that, like Tobias Harris that can catch fire, Avery Bradley, who's a respectable three-point shooter. You have the rookie Luke Kennard. A guy that doesn't get a lot of talking about, at least not in the general NBA, it would be Langston Galloway and Anthony Tolliver, both very capable three-point shooters who want to shoot threes. So I think they have the personnel on the floor to get it done. Honestly, I would like to see them shoot more threes per game than they have been. I think they're right around the 15th mark when it comes to three-point attempts. I like to see them kind of get that up a little bit more and kind of look for that shot a little bit more, because they have the guys on the floor that can hit the shots. And you're right, it's a modern game. You got to either be hitting threes or you got to be getting a lot of your points right near the basket. Those mid-range long twos aren't a great shot selection because a long range two and a 3-point shot pretty much have a very similar likelihood of going in. So you might as well shoot the shot that gets you one more point.
You've got two guys on this team right now that are at 40% or better, which is considered to be a very, very good mark from distance, and that would be Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley. And both of them are taking, well, Harris has taken about six of them a game. Bradley just a shade under five. Then Reggie Jackson hits 36%. Tolliver, you just mentioned, at 39%. Overall, and Galloway, too, just a shade under 40. Overall, they're a 38% team from three. That is pretty doggone respectable. I don't have that in terms of NBA team ranks, but that's got to be in the top half of it, if not higher. Is that something Stan is comfortable with? Is you know, kind of becoming a three-point primary weapon, rather three-pointer being a primary weapon rather than something they have to settle for?
No, I think he's very comfortable with that.
Is something like that, by playing for the Lakers and coming after all the various greats that that franchise has had relative to, say, a LeBron or a Michael Jordan, who are clearly now and will for a long, 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 long time going into the future, easily that franchise's best player. And I wonder if that plays into it even a tiny little bit.
Probably does. I think it probably does. And you know who's a good person to ask that question of? That would be David Fernandez. And I think we should do that. I think it's a great conversation to continue. In addition to Team Streak, the Pistons, David Fernandez, of course, writes about the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. And he's going to be our next guest after the bottom of the hour local sports center that's coming up. And hey, Kush.
Yes.
On the way into this bottom of the hour local sports center, I have in front of me what looked to be a couple of tickets to a hockey game. And if you like your walleye on ice rather than on the grill or in the frying pan, you can go see them. Walleye and Indy Fuels, 7:15 start on the 27th. That's a week from tomorrow. A week from tomorrow, the 27th, at the Huntington Center. If you want to go see the Toledo Walleye and the Indy Fuel, you got it. Tickets are yours, a pair of them, at 866-240-1065 for caller number 7. Lucky number 7, 866-240-1065. We'll set you up with Walleye. Then we're going to come back and talk Pistons basketball, David Fernandez, and hopefully you as well at 866-240-1065. Yes, indeed. Rolling onward, it's 437, 23 minutes of outstanding awesome left until drive time comes your way. With Mr. Mike Miller, and I want to shift gears. Well, we're staying with the NBA, but just shifting gears from our conversation we had with Rick Noland out of Cleveland, talking about the Cavaliers, team dominant, 18 out of 19 and 5 in a row against Team Streak. Three wins in a row, followed by 7 losses in a row, followed by 3 wins in a row. They don't like to do that win-loss thing very much in Detroit. Joining us now to talk about it is David Fernandez, who writes about Team Streak for DetroitBadBoys.com. And, David, thanks for joining us once again, my friend. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Just counting down the days of the holidays.
Yes, indeed. 6 to go, if my count is right. 6 to go until Christmas 2017. And for those celebrating Hanukkah that's going on now, happy Hanukkah. But it is indeed a great time of the year. All right, you know, the Pistons are giving gifts, obviously, to their fans right now by snapping a losing streak and following it with a winning streak. This really is a team that can let whatever is happening build upon itself, is it not, considering the number of, you know, the amount of streaks that I guess they've undergone in the past a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, you never like to see that long of a losing streak. It was around 2 weeks where they couldn't get a win. And even in game, they've been going on streaks where they're giving up big leads in the fourth quarter and then kind of going on a little streak to end it and get the win in their last game. So, yeah, you know, they've looked good, against some of the, you know, lesser teams, in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, it's just something that they have to do to be, you know, right where they are. They're at the number 4 seed in the playoffs right now. To kind of keep that streak going, you know, they really have to just keep on beating up on their easier schedule.
Yeah, Jim Cushlin pointed out before how they were second in the East the last time they played the Cavaliers. Then the 7-game losing streak knocked them all the way down to 8th. And now their 3-game winning streak, they're back up to 4th. So, you know, I mean, talk about just, you know, roller coastering and up and down they go in the standings. It's not extraordinarily essential right now given the fact that it's still mid-December. But is this what this team is going to be built on? Is this team going to be riding highs for a long period of time and then really, you know, suffering with the lows? Because it just kind of doesn't seem like, you know, it seems like momentum, I guess, for lack of a better word, is really what carries them, whether it be positive momentum or negative momentum, David.
Yeah, I don't think it's too much of you know, how that they are, like, psychologically when they're approaching games. I think a lot has to do with the quality of opponent that they're playing. They played one of the most, while they were on that seven-game losing streak, those first 20-something odd games of the season, they had the second toughest strength of schedule in the NBA at that point. Now it's lightened up a little bit since then because they played the Hawks. Pacers, who are a quality team, and the Magic, who aren't that great. But I think it's more so just a testament to, even in that losing streak, they were losing by 4 points at the Spurs. They were losing by, you know, 5-6 points or something like that with the Warriors at home. They lost by 4 points at the Bucks. You know, they were really in almost all of those games, remaining competitive. And, you know, frankly, just a few shots didn't go their way. But they were in them, so it wasn't like they were getting blown out. It wasn't
until the Nuggets game, that
was one of the more concerning games. I think that was the one where up until that point I wasn't concerned, but then after the Nuggets game I was like, whoa, you know, and the Nuggets didn't have their two best players in Jokic and Paul Millsap, so I was under the impression that they were going to kind of rout them in that game. They were 6 points favorites in Vegas, and that's, you know, it's kind of high for just a regular season game. Against a team with the exact record that you have. So I was a little concerned, but they've righted the ship since then, and they've looked impressive during a lot of these stretches during their last three games.
We're talking to David Fernandez, who writes about the Pistons for DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. Team Streak has won three in a row now, and it looks like there are periods of time when they look like they want to be a 2017 team, meaning embracing the three-point shot. For example, in this particular game, you know, a franchise record 17. I'm not saying they're going to make or take 17 threes a game all the time, but they show spurts of being that team that isn't going to be trying to be too creative offensively and you know, find ways to work for good shots in the paint and that sort of thing, or up-tempo and running. But they are going to embrace what so many other teams, including the defending champions, have, and that is the outside shot. Are they a team of good enough shooters to do this, again, not to the level of 17, that's a franchise record, but to embrace that as a fundamental core principle of their offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they've already proved that. We're already over a third of the way through the season right now at this point. They were ranking, and this is just by memory, they were up in the top 10 in three-point shooting percentage so far this season. They have guys that, like Tobias Harris that can catch fire, Avery Bradley, who's a respectable three-point shooter. You have the rookie Luke Kennard. A guy that doesn't get a lot of talking about, at least not in the general NBA, it would be Langston Galloway and Anthony Tolliver, both very capable three-point shooters who want to shoot threes. So I think they have the personnel on the floor to get it done. Honestly, I would like to see them shoot more threes per game than they have been. I think they're right around the 15th mark when it comes to three-point attempts. I'd like to see them kind of get that up a little bit more and kind of look for that shot a little bit more, because they have the guys on the floor that can hit the shots. And you're right, it's a modern game. You got to either be hitting threes or you got to be getting a lot of your points right near the basket. Those mid-range long twos aren't a great shot selection, because a long-range two and a three-point shot pretty much have a very similar likelihood of going in, so you might as well shoot the shot that gets you one more point.
You've got two guys on this team right now that are at 40% or better, which is considered to be a very, very good mark from distance, and that would be Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley, and both of them are taking, well, Harris is taking about six of them a game, Bradley just a shade under five. Then Reggie Jackson hits 36%, Tolliver you just mentioned at 39%, overall, and Galloway too, just a shade under 40. Overall, they're a 38% team from three. That is pretty doggone respectable. I don't have that in terms of NBA team ranks, but that's got to be in the top half of it, if not higher. Is that something Stan is comfortable with, is you know, kind of becoming a three-point primary weapon, rather three-pointer being a primary weapon rather than something they have to settle for?
No, I think he's very comfortable with that. I think he's embraced it. He realizes that Andre Drummond isn't Dwight Howard. Last couple seasons, when they put Andre Drummond on the block and they just kind of let him go to work and you know, take 5-6 post-up attempts a game, it really kind of killed offensive flow. Stan has realized so far this season that that's not Andre's strength. Andre's actually a fantastic passer. Who would have thunk it? You know, you give him the ball in his hands, you make him make decisions. He's averaging right around 4 assists per game this season. So I really think that he has started to find what his player strengths are and start to highlight those a little bit more. And even with back, and you're looking back in Stan Van Gundy's days in Orlando, he had a one-in, four-out system where he had a guy down in the middle that was causing havoc in Dwight Howard. He surrounded him with three-point shooters. Now, the game's changed a little bit. That's not necessarily the type of system that you see being too successful right now, but just generally speaking, I think he's always embraced long-distance shooters. When you look at Hedo Turkoglu and Rashad Lewis, J.J. Redick that were on his team in Orlando, but now he's got the personnel in Detroit, and he's just letting it fly, and I like it.
Yeah, to the point that I made a moment ago, and I know Jim Cushion's got a question about Avery Bradley here, but to the point I made a moment ago, I said it's got to be top half. It sure as hell is. It's top five. Well, there are three teams tied for the fifth best three-point shooting percentage as a team, and that would be Detroit, Atlanta, and New Orleans, all at 38.383%. The top four are Golden State, Indiana, Utah, and Sacramento, which is interesting because there's a mixed bag there of really successful playoff-caliber teams and really bottom feeders. But Detroit has embraced it, apparently, because they are fifth, at least in terms of percentage. In terms of three-point attempts, and this is, you know, man attempts, not actual attempts per game, but just based on their averages as a roster, they're down there a bit more. Still just outside the top half, in fact, the 17th most at 29.5 a game added collectively among the teams. Houston at 43 a game. Obviously, they're not shooting 43 a game. That's per man added collectively. They take 43 a game. So they're not among the top 15, top half in terms of attempts, but they are in terms of percentage. So maybe those numbers will start to rise. David, Jim Cushman does have one for you, Jimmy.
And talking about Avery Bradley, we mentioned his name a couple times, but haven't mentioned this part yet. And more of this, more or less this just coming down right about Bob when we took the air maybe an hour and a half or so ago. He's already missed two games because of a little bit of a groin injury. Now the Pistons are saying they're going to shut him down for the rest of this week and more or less evaluate him on a week-to-week basis. So he's not even going to potentially play again until a week from today. So that'd be the 26th against the Pacers. So he's going to miss tomorrow and he's going to miss Friday. How different does this team have to play and look without Avery Bradley in there?
They played well so far without Avery Bradley. I think you've seen guys like Reggie Bullock start to get a little bit more touches since he's been inserted in the starting lineup instead of Stanley Johnson. The rookie Luke Kennard has gotten some good looks. He had a really good game against the Pacers. I think they have the personnel to survive this. They're pretty deep at the shooting guard slot. With when you have Luke Kennard, who can play shooting guard, you have Langston Galloway, who's just been on fire these past few games. You have Reggie Bullock, who can play a little bit of the two, and even Stanley Johnson, you can kind of slate him in there. It's not his preferred role, but I think they're good with the depth right now. Now, this would be a concern for me. I guess the verbiage that I was not so comfortable with was the week-to-week thing. It wasn't like they said they're going to shut him down for a week and make it a day-to-day thing. So that type of approach concerns me a little bit, but I think Detroit knew this when they signed Avery Bradley or when they traded for him. He's not a guy that plays all 82 games. There's been plenty of seasons where he's been shut down for 20 or so games. So I think they were mentally prepared for that. So it's just something that they have to kind of step up, but they will be lacking on the defensive end. There's just no two ways about it. There's no quality on-ball defender on that roster like Avery Bradley.
MVP of the first quarter plus of the season, first 30 games or so. Is it LeBron James or James Harden?
James Harden for me. And that pains me to say. It doesn't necessarily pain me to say. It pains me that it's clearly between these two. Because I'm one of the biggest LeBron James fans, even though I cover the Pistons. He's just an outstanding player. And then, you know, with James Harden, he's just got that team humming. And not that LeBron James doesn't, but just the things that he's able to do, leading the league in scoring, and then also either one or two in assists. I think it's his time. I think he's kind of missed out these last two seasons, and he's got the team playing really well. And right now, people are talking about them as an actual contender for the Golden State Warriors. Not saying that they're going to beat them, but saying that they could actually get him six or seven games. And that's pretty incredible, and I think he deserves it at this point.
Yeah, and you know what? It is incredible, and they very well could contend with the Warriors the way things look right now. Now, will they keep this pace up and be able to do the things they're doing in, you know, March and in April and in May? That's the question, of course. But you're right. Harden makes a very, very strong case. I think LeBron makes a better case at this point in time because of the run that they're on. First of all, they've won 18 out of 19, and he personally, in 13 games, the last 13, has averaged a triple-double, and not just a close one, but, you know, a dominant one of 27 points, and I want to say 12 and 11. It's really remarkable what he's doing, and the fact that his 33rd birthday is 11 days from now. To do that, to be having his best season at 30, almost 33, is just, you know, it's quite remarkable. And speaking of remarkable, David, since we got you on and we're talking Pistons, we're talking all things NBA, and we have to talk about the Mamba and the retirement of two different numbers yesterday at Staples Center. Where is Kobe for you in terms of all-timeness? We've been discussing what a lot of people have called the Mount Rushmore of the NBA in the last few years, talking about what heads are going to be on it. And LeBron said 2 years ago he gave his four, and he said his was not one of them, but it will be by the time he's done. He said he will nudge his way onto that mountain and push somebody off, whoever it is, and which is certainly fine to say. But Kobe's name in our discussions anyway, David, it doesn't come up very much when you talk about Magic, Bird, Bron, Jordan, Kareem, Duncan, you know, all of these guys who have had, you know, five championships or more, and Kobe's got five, and 25 points a game for his career, and 18 All-Star appearances, and 81 points in a game, second most ever, and all of this stuff, his name never is really mentioned in that context of Mount Rushmore. So as you look back on the career of the Mamba, which was celebrated last night, where is he for you?
I don't know if I have him in the top 10 either. You mentioned some guys there, you know, and honestly, I have Shaq as a more important player of those particular Lakers teams than I do Kobe. I think Kobe was more, and it was part of the team, you know, that they had to feed the big guy, but just watching basketball back then, I'd never seen a player like Shaq. And I think that he kind of has slid down a little bit, and people don't realize what he was when he was at his prime. He was literally unstoppable. Like, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, they had no answer for him. So, you know, I thought that he was a little bit more of an important player back then. But Kobe's done a great job, you know, since Shaq was gone, and to get a couple rings with the Paul Gasol team. But I don't think I have him there in the top 10. You know, you look at guys, you mentioned a few, Michael, LeBron James, Kareem, Tim, Shaq. Wilt Chamberlain as well, Bill Russell, you know, these are guys that while they're a bit older of generations, with at least Wilt and, Bill, you know, they're guys that really left an imprint on the NBA. And, you know, I think that they kind of get, you know, a little bit, they're not talked about as much either just because they are of an older generation.
You know, I can respect what you say about Shaq being more important to those three championship teams for the Lakers than Kobe does or was. But allow me to challenge you on it with the fact that when Shaq left, Kobe kept winning championships. He did it with Pau Gasol two times, not with Shaquille O'Neal. That's a spectacular thing. And when Shaq left and won one more, it was when Dwayne Wade was clearly the cog in that engine. It wasn't Shaq. Shaq was kind of the accessory for D. Wade when he won his title, Dwayne's first title, of course. He won two more with LeBron, but Dwayne's first title was when he was the best player on that floor. How do you square that Kobe kept winning without Shaq, two more, and Pau Gasol, a far inferior player to Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah, I guess I would say that in their primes, give me Shaq. Now, with that being said, Kobe was able to prolong his career. He, you know, there's a video on YouTube where it's like side by side him and Michael Jordan. He's really kind of developed his game. You know, he really played in the post and had a lot of fadeaway jumpers. You know, he took away from that sort of, kind of dunk all over you type of shooting guard like he was when he was younger. So I think you got to give Kobe respect for that. But at the same time, Shaq, a lot of those years, he was so big. You know, his knees, his back, he was all messed up towards the later end of that stretch. So I know that he did kind of have a more rapid decline, and he didn't necessarily look like himself after those Laker years. But, you know, just put me on the spot, I'm going to take Shaq when it comes to them in their particular prime. But also, I think with Kobe, a lot of the stuff that why he isn't so highly perceived right now is the way that he went out. The last two or three seasons in LA I was talking to a buddy yesterday. It was pretty much unwatchable. It was really poor. It kind of sucked the life out of LA. It sucked the life out of some of their younger players. You look at D'Angelo Russell, who's no longer on the team. He was just the number two pick a couple seasons ago. You know, I think that has a lot to do with how Kobe's perceived.
I think that's true, David. I won't argue the merits of it. I just really wish it wasn't the case because it's totally unfair. I mean, I don't think of Akeem Olajuwon in 61 games for the Toronto Raptors, you know, when it was 7 points and four rebounds and just absolutely painful to watch. I don't think of Patrick Ewing as a supersonic, and I don't think we should remember Kobe the way it was in that last year just because he didn't change uniforms. I think you got to remember the guy at his prime, just to be fair to him and everybody else. But you make a very valid point on it. David, music playing.
Hey, before
so we're
we go, guys, before we go, guys, yo, since we are talking to David real quick, Andre Drummond free throw update. He is still shooting 62.7% from the line, 96-153. Guys, I'm going on a limb. It's December 19th. I think this is for real, and we'll continue.
My man, I love to hear that. That's a great stat update, Kush. Thanks much. Hey, David, if we don't talk to you before next Monday, and we probably will not, a very Merry Christmas to you, and thanks so much for your time today. We'll catch up again soon.
Merry Christmas, guys. Thanks.
Thanks so much. That's it. It's all the time we got. Drive Time coming up next right here on The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.